Do you know that Wisconsin has, I think, 5.7 million acres, if I'm not mistaken, of public lands for you and I to enjoy? And we're going to talk about those public lands today with a couple of guests we have in the studio with me. Tim Lizotte is public land specialist with the Bureau of Wildlife Management, and Paul Cunningham is a fisheries ecologist, chief technical consultant on fisheries restoration in Wisconsin lakes, of course, both with the Department of Natural Resources. Great to have them come by to talk about public lands. And maybe I bet you've used public lands in one way or another. Maybe you volunteered to help with land management on public lands. Join in the conversation. The number is 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Tim Lizotte, welcome. Nice to have you with us.
Thanks, Larry. Big fan of the show. Glad to be in studio today.
And Paul Cunningham, thank you for coming by as well.
Well, it's great to be here, Larry.
It's great to have you both here. Tim, when we say public lands, what does that all include?
Well, Larry, generally when we're referencing public lands, we're talking about lands owned by municipalities. And in Wisconsin, we have three major landholders. So that's the federal government, and their biggest holdings are our national forests, and the feds own about 1.8 million acres of land in the state. Then we also have county lands, primarily made up of our county forests in northern Wisconsin, about 2.4 million acres, and then, of course, the state of Wisconsin, primary landowner of which is the DNR, at about 1.6 million acres. Overall, we've got about 17% of the state's total lands are owned by one public entity or another.
That's pretty cool.
It's an impressive portfolio.
Yeah, absolutely. Paul, how do you figure in on this? You're a fisheries guy in a way.
So I lead for fisheries, the land acquisition program, in our stream bank protection program and our fishery areas. Now, we don't hold as much land as wildlife, but we got some critical land around and some important water features across the state. So all our many of our trout fishing opportunities are on our fishery areas and our stream bank protection streams. And we've got over 90 active fishery areas projects across the state today.
When the whole business of setting aside public lands has been going on for a long time, hasn't it?
It has. The department actually made its, I believe our first land purchase was in 1876, the Nevin Springs Fish and Wildlife Area. So this has been going on for quite some time. It really picked up steam in 1989 with the authorization of our state stewardship program, which basically is a program funded through state bonds that funds purchase of lands for public enjoyment and nature-based recreation. Those funds go to not only the DNR, but also to local units of government and actually even nonprofit conservation organizations. We issue grants to them as well. And those lands are basically open to the public for what we call the five nature-based outdoor activities: hunt, fish, trap, cross-country skiing, and hiking.
So that's a lot of areas. And I'm going to switch back to Paul for just a second, because I remember the first interview I ever did, this is a long time ago, was at the Muskie Rearing Pond in Superior, in Spooner, Wisconsin, or near Spooner, Wisconsin. And the state does have the fish hatcheries around the state, do we not? Or is that going by the board?
No, we still have an active group of fish hatcheries across the state. We originally had about 17. Now we've trimmed it back down. We've got a couple that have been mothballed, but the Spooner Hatchery, or Governor Thompson Fish Hatchery, it raises the bulk of our muskellunge and walleye for stocking in waters across the state.
It was kind of cool to visit that.
I think every kids group and school group in Northwest Wisconsin goes through the Governor Thompson Fish Hatchery as part of their tours.
Oh man, well that's fun. Where do we get the funds again for acquiring?
Well, it's the state stewardship program, and it was begun in 1989. Reauthorized in 1993 and renamed as the Knowles-Nelson Stewardship Program. Mm-hmm. And that was to recognize Governors Warren Knowles and Gaylord Nelson, who were really big-time conservation leaders
yeah, they
in
were
the
great.
State. And again, that's a bonded program, and it varies based on the biennial state budget on how much is allocated to it. But that has really been the primary driver in how we purchase those lands. Those bonds are paid for by all the citizens of the state and non-residents taxpayers, and they're also open to enjoyment by everyone in the state.
Well, with all that land, you'd think I would guess that you're never too far, no matter where you live in the state, from some public lands.
Yeah, there's actually public land, I believe, in every county except perhaps Menominee. And I think I'll refer to Paul on this, but we've got a variety of tools available for the public to find public lands near them.
Yes, and we've made some significant investments for our new modernized society in terms of technology. We have smartphone applications, and we collaborated with University of Wisconsin to produce, it's called the Public Access Land System, or PALS. It's an atlas. You can get it in a few ways. You can, through the university bookstores, buy a big directory, and it's about 100 and some pages, as I recall. Or you can download a county at a time on your computer. Or we have a tool, it's an interactive mapping tool, where you can go on our website and zoom in, see aerial photos.
I think that's really cool.
And build your own maps, essentially, to explore new opportunities. And then on top of that, we've put together a tool called Trout, and it's the Trout recreational outdoor users tool, and you can see the trout class, where we own easements, where we own our fee, know the regs, and actually, if I put find me, I could see that I'm on the top of Vilas Hall right now and see where my nearest class one trout stream with public land is. In wildlife, we have a couple tools. F-Flight, it's Tim, is it fields and forests, and it's for grouse, pheasant, and woodcock hunting mainly?
Yeah, with of course, hunting season is already here, and so the department, we have two applications. One is web-based, as Paul mentioned, F-Flight, and what that allows is you can use it on your computer or your smartphone. There's a mobile web page, and essentially, again, you can locate your own position, and you can see all state lands that are stocked with pheasants, and as well as the other layer is the alder and aspen habitat, which is really important to those that like to hunt grouse and woodcock. So you can find that. The other, we do actually have an app, too, called the Pocket Ranger, and that is really cool app that has air photos, shows your location, and shows DNR properties on there as well. That has a neat little tool on it called my Friend Finder, or Hunting Buddy, and you can actually synchronize your smartphones with your friends and see where you are in relation to each other when you're out doing a hunt or other outdoor activity.
Safety first.
Yeah, that interactive site is really well done. I mean, you've got pretty much everything. And how do you find that again?
You would go on the department's website and search on the term Atlas, and it'll take you to the interactive mapping tool, or vault you into University of Wisconsin to buy the book, or whatever way you feel most comfortable exploring new opportunities, whether it's on a mapping tool on your computer or using the old more traditional book means. They're available.
Well, let's go to Gary, and Boscobel's got a question for us. Gary, hi, thanks for calling.
Thank you, Larry. I have a question and a comment. I've been touring some of the back roads here in Crawford County and Vernon County and photographing some of the unbelievable damage that's been done to the streams here, and millions of tons of rock and soil has been moved around. I'm wondering whether any trout or any kind of aquatic life can survive some of these devastating floods, and whether the trout will be able to repopulate on their own, or whether all these streams will have to be stocked with hatchery fish. And then my comment on the public lands here in Wisconsin is that I've been doing prairie and savanna restoration work for almost 40 years now, and one of the things that I'm really critical of is the lack of funds or manpower to manage these public lands, and they are all almost all in desperate need of controlled burns and periodic fires to maintain native plant populations and also to set back invasive species populations. And it's ironic that a bureau within the Department of Natural Resources, mainly forestry and fire control, are obsessive about using any kind of fire to manage large areas of land. And I've seen places in Black River Falls areas where you have fires that are really, really helpful for the landscape there, being sandy barrens and savanna habitats. And as soon as the fires are out, the forestry people are in there planting red pine and converting these really precious and rare grassland habitats back into biologically sterile white red pine plantations. And so it's really dismaying to see this land use being so convoluted.
Yeah, well, I'm going to break in because we're almost at a news break here, and we'll won't have time to answer all that, I'm sure, but we can pick it up after the news. But what about the stream and the flooding? Can we talk about that a little bit, Paul?
Sure. So, Gary, we're seeing some unique unprecedented rain events associated with climate change right now, these large storms. And thankfully, this last one came not during the middle of the heat of the summer. So for our trout streams, while there was a significant flooding and impacts, they aren't thermal effects. They're on the trout. They are able to hunker down a lot of the trout, especially adult trout, during these high flow events, hunker down and ride out the storm, so to speak.
And we'll continue that. Paul, you can talk some more about that, and I'm sure we'll address some of these other the lack of funds issues that he brought up. We'll take a quick look at the news and weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be right back with Tim Lizotte and Paul Cunningham. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network today. Larry Mueller here, taking a look now at our public lands in Wisconsin. They frankly bring in millions of dollars every year in tourism dollars. And of course, they give you and I the opportunity to really get out there and experience all that can be Wisconsin. And many opportunities for you to get involved in managing them as well. We can talk about that a bit, too, with our two guests, Tim Lizotte, DNR Public Land Specialist with the Bureau of Wildlife Management and the DNR, and Paul Cunningham, Paul, Fisheries Ecologist, Chief Technical Consultant on Fisheries Restoration in Wisconsin Lakes for the DNR. I know public lands are important to many people, probably to you. Join in with your own questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of the page. And as we were broke for news, we had a couple of questions, but one concerned management and controlled burns and that sort of thing on our public lands. And our caller was a little frustrated that we don't have perhaps more management of those lands. And Tim Lizotte, well, let me turn to you for that.
Sure. Well, first of all, I think we recognize some of the concerns Gary brought up in terms of having limited resources and a lot of land out there to manage. I would say that the department does do prescribed burns on about 25,000 acres annually for a variety of habitat management goals. We're actually currently in the process of prioritizing that burning where we can get the best bang for our buck in terms of doing that. And we also do look around the state and determine which areas are most suitable for certain habitat types. So, for instance, grasslands in the south, trees in the north is one of the decisions that we make that we go into doing these habitat restoration projects. State land management, once it's acquired, the funding for that primarily comes from revenues, not tax dollars. So fishing licenses, hunting licenses, park stickers, that is the revenue that feeds management on state land. So those funds can be quite limited, so prioritization is critical for us. The other thing that we're increasingly reliant upon is our partners and our friends to help us manage state lands. A couple of programs I want to highlight. Paul and I worked together to form the new Adopt a Fish and Wildlife Area program. That lets anyone from individuals to groups come in and basically take over all or a portion of management on a state property. Really gives them local community ownership. We can turn over the keys, in some cases provide equipment, and these groups can go on and, based on our master plan for the property, really help us get some work done. The other thing is with state parks, and also some state fish and wildlife areas have friends groups. That's kind of a step above the Adopt a Wildlife mm-hmm. Area, greater commitment, longer term. And then lastly, the department has a donation fund called the Cherish Fund. And that's administered by the Natural Resource Foundation. And every time a license privilege is purchased from the DNR, whether that's an ATV registration or a fishing license, the purchaser is asked if they want to make a donation to the Cherish Fund. That money is going to go into an endowment and will be available in perpetuity to help us manage land. So if anybody's interested in helping out financially, certainly the Cherish Fund would be the place I would direct them.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I always add some money onto my license when
that's what we like to hear.
And I usually buy the well, no, I don't usually. I always buy the what's
the
patron license.
Sure.
Because even though I'm not going to use all those, I always figure it's going to go to a good cause somewhere along the line. Well, we have other callers. If you want to join in, there's open lines for you at 1-800-642-1234. I hope you'll give a call. And I know Paul's been waiting a long time from Appleton, so let's go to Paul. Thank you for waiting, Paul.
Hi, Larry.
What can we do for you today?
I was wondering if your guest could comment on the current Wisconsin DNR land that's for sale. I believe it's over 5,000 acres, and maybe give some more info and comment on, you know, the whys and wherefores behind that. And with regards to some of the budget issues that were already raised, I believe one of the political platforms has the goal of transferring federal lands, you know, the federal forests and parks to the state. And I was wondering what if they had any comment or opinion on being able to handle that.
Okay. Good questions. Let's turn to Paul Cunningham first.
So, Larry, the legislature enacted Act 20, and mm-hmm. that was a legislative mandate that required the department make available for sale 10,000 acres by June 30th, 2017. And so we've already screened and reviewed what we call Phase 1 and 2 lands, and the Natural Resources Board had acted on numerous parcels, and we're into Phase 3 now, mm-hmm. Have come in for field review, the Phase 3 parcels, and they will go before the Natural Resources Board at our October board meeting. And the department's recommendation to the Natural Resources Board on the remaining 3,500 that we must make available for this Act 20 requirement will be available on the department's website, and there will be a press release right around October 5th. So those lands and the department's recommendation, the public can participate in advising the Natural Resources Board as well at the October board meeting. And so it's while 10,000 acres is a considerable chunk of land,
yeah,
it's a in proportion to our inholding of 1.6 million acres, it's a fairly small percentage.
Yeah. How do what were the generally speaking? I imagine every single piece of property is different in a lot of ways. Were there some overall kinds of criteria that were used?
Well, the first criteria is that the parcel being considered be outside of a Natural Resources Board approved project boundary. Mm-hmm. So the Natural Resources Board establishes these boundaries for where we can buy fee and easement. Projects, but we also have these scattered parcels mm-hmm. across the state called remnant areas or scattered wildlife habitat areas as well. And so that's the first requirement. And then in principle, the other two themes are, does the parcel, what's its value towards conservation value and then recreational values? And so those are the two overlying themes. And Tim, do you want care to comment?
I think you nailed it, and I just wanted to, within the mandate that we had, the department had a very rigorous screening process so that the 10,000 acres we're offering for sale were those that least helped us meet our mission. And so that rigorous screening process went through department staff, and it also will go to public review and ultimate approval by the NRB. But we are bound to that 10,000 acres being offered for sale by the target date of June 30th.
Okay, there we go. Good question, Paul. Thank you so much for calling.
Also, Paul, Tim and I commented, we have no knowledge of the federal lands being moved to the state portfolio at all. It's not on our radar screen, to my knowledge.
Okay, there we go. Thanks, Paul. Eleanor in Eau Claire, it's your turn. Hi, Eleanor.
Hi. I wanted to call because I'm a chair of the Lower Chippewa River Alliance, and I just wanted to bring attention to the Natural Resources Foundation, the Wisconsin Natural Resources Foundation account that we've been, as an organization, we've been raising money for, and that is the Lower Chippewa River Basin Foundation account. And instead of trying to raise money and put it in the bank here locally, this is in an account that pays out 5% every year, and the DNR gets that money, and that is usually used for matching grants. And it's for prairie restoration, eliminating invasive species, oak savanna restoration. And we're up to, well, from when it started probably about 6-8 years ago, we're up to over $100,000 in our foundation account. And this is what the DNR, the DNR people need when they apply for big grants. They need matching funds and to show local support. And so I would really encourage listeners to go to the Wisconsin Natural Resources Foundation website and then look at all of the funds that are available to provide resources, to provide money for local lakes, rivers, and streams. So it's a really important asset in our state when the funding, the state tax dollars, are being reduced every year.
Yeah. Comments? Thanks a lot, Eleanor, for calling. Tim, a comment from you?
Well, I think Eleanor brings up a good point, and while the DNR is charged with oversight of these public lands, they really do belong to each and every individual. I mean, that's what makes them public lands. And so I think we have a shared responsibility for their management. And while the department certainly can be the leader, we definitely do not have the resources to do it alone. So it's those types of partnerships that are really critical to maximizing the return of the benefits of these public lands.
And as well, when we're competing for federal funds and writing grant applications for the department, often it's this match and partnerships that are formed with, like, the Natural Resources Foundation that give us a competitive advantage in competing for limited federal monies as well.
Yeah, good points. Thanks again, Eleanor. Appreciate your call.
Thank you.
You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. I want to go back to the fall fishery a little bit, Paul, because it's a time when a lot of people quit fishing, and there's great opportunities out there. And you may talk a little bit about the seasonal fall fishing.
Yeah. I hunt a lot. So, but related to fishing opportunities, while on our inland trout streams, we've extended the season till mid-October, and we have about 520 miles of easements along trout streams across the strait. But in the fall, our Great Lakes tributaries and harbor areas really are vibrant with activity on shore fishing. As in Lake Michigan, for example, we have from Algoma down to Kenosha. Many of these tributary areas have ports and great pier fishing. As the Chinook and then the coho and the brown trout come in. And many of these tributary areas, too, have wildlife areas. So for our publics, public land is public land. And some of these great streams have some awesome trout and salmon fishing opportunities. For example, the Peshtigo River has a wildlife area joining it, and it has a great run. So all up and down the coast, we enjoy these great runs. And on where to fish, you have we put out a publication of 50 places within 60 miles of Milwaukee for fishing trout and salmon. And we have our Lake Superior Fish and Wildlife, South Shores Fish and Wildlife Area for Lake Superior. Systems like the River of Presidents, the Brule, the Sioux, the Flag, the Cranberry, all across the South Shore where we get coho come in, and the browns. Browns are a little more protracted in their runs, and then finally the steelhead as well. And so we have an amazing shore fishery in the fall for our, on our Great Lakes.
I've actually caught quite a few coho right off the shore, as a matter of fact, over in the Milwaukee area. It's and north,
right? And in addition, now we've done quite a bit of river restoration on the Milwaukee River and removed dams, and so that anadromous fall fishery is growing in extent spatially and its popularity.
An area like the let's go further north to the Apostle Islands, the National Lakeshore. How is the state involved with these kinds of areas, or are we? We are involved.
Well, we work pretty closely with all of our partners, whether they're county or federal, and of course, the Apostle Islands is managed by the feds, but certainly the state's a partner in that management, but they take the lead role on those.
We have more callers online. Go ahead with we'll go ahead with Steve and Hurley next. Steve, hi. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. Here's my question. I love the public ownership that we get in Wisconsin. However, the question for the forestry end of it is why, when the state gets involved in logging, do they tend to clear cut instead of selective cut? When you selective cut, we are able to use the land immediately for hunting, but with a clear cut, it takes the land out of public use for probably close to 20 years. So that's the question. Go ahead.
Okay, thanks for calling. And Tim, do you want to take that one?
Sure. This is a pretty timely question, given just been involved in a couple seminars on our young forest initiatives throughout the state. But essentially, we have to think of timber harvest is basically a land management tool that has a defined objective. And there are a variety of timber harvest techniques, silvicultural techniques, that range from a clear cut where basically every tree is harvested and removed, all the way to shade tree and seed tree and selective cuttings where only certain ages or certain individual species are removed. It's completely dependent on what the end result goal is. Clear cuts are most often used in some of our pulp industry woods, so aspen being the most common. And the state has an emphasis right now on young forests because many of our forests are maturing, yet there are a suite of wildlife species, some of the most notable being, say, rough grouse. That
woodcock.
Woodcock, white-tailed deer, absolutely, that require sort of these younger-aged forests. And certain tree species actually do much better under a clear-cut scenario than they would do if you had got to pick your way throughout the stand. So it really, I guess, depends on the individual tree species and what the goals are for that stand. And all of that is ultimately decided by the master plans, which are public approved plans on how the state's going to manage these properties.
So it's not clear cut on everything. It's
absolutely not. The state's timber, again, it's all driven by the master plan. What is the goal for the property? Is it wildlife? Is it public recreation? And really the value of the timber is secondary. So we harvest stands based on what the ecological and social recreational goals are. It is really a planned process.
Okay, there we go. Steve, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. We had a question on Facebook. I'm not sure this one could be answered by you guys, but Frank wonders if we should look at a model of ownership like the National Trust in England, where land is owned by a charity and then it's free from any kinds of other influences. And I'm sure, Tim, you maybe would address that.
Sure. We have a model in the United States that is very similar, and it's called our land trust model. And these are nonprofit, for the most part, conservation organizations. There's ones that, if you take somebody like the Nature Conservancy, that spans the globe. And there's little ones like the Kettle Moraine Land Trust that focuses on one or two counties. So it really ranges widely. But these are organizations that purchase land to be held in the public trust and for a variety of benefits, whether they're ecological or social or recreational. What is unique and interesting with our state stewardship program is a portion of that is set aside specifically to issue grants to these nonprofit conservation organizations. So it is not held by a municipality. It's held by, as Frank says, basically a private charity.
And you wanted to add to that, Paul.
And one of the obligations that the land trust holds is to making those lands open to the public.
Yeah, and so those are, anybody can use those lands then.
Yeah, if stewardship dollars were spent on that acquisition of that trust.
Yeah, beginning in 2013, our legislature directed that whenever stewardship funds are used, that those five nature-based activities are allowed on the property. Again, hunting, fishing, trapping, hiking, and cross-country skiing.
You know, I want to go back here. We're down to our last minute or two, and I want to go back to highlight some of the resources that you were talking about earlier, the apps and so forth. And just to remind people who are joining in late, where do we go? There, as you were saying earlier, Paul, you can really pinpoint a lot of things through these websites.
I can see where you parked your car, Larry. No, we have a lot of new cool tools, and you can go to the DNR's website and search on the keyword Atlas, and then you can, at your leisure, use the Atlas to find shore fishing sites, boat landings, all our portfolio of public lands, whether they be federal, county, or state, and use that as a tool to explore new areas of opportunities, whether it's a kayaking trip or a rough grouse hunt in Taylor County or a fall fishing trip on the River of Presidents, the Brule River. Yeah. We've spent some significant investments in our Public Lands Atlas system, and I think I've heard good things about it.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. Well, I want to thank you guys for coming by today and talking with us about the lands that we have here, the public lands in Wisconsin. Thanks again. I hope we have a chance to visit again. Appreciate
Absolutely.
It very much.
Absolutely. And I guess I'm wishing everybody a safe and enjoyable fall season and fall hunting season out on our state lands.
Tim Lizotte and Paul Cunningham, our guests. Tim, public land specialist. Paul, fisheries ecologist, both with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Fun talking with them about what we've got here for public lands in the state. Tomorrow we'll be talking about the advantages of a liberal arts education, among other things. And in the meantime, please stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.